Good morning and welcome to the After Easter Breakfast Special. There's a bit of rhyme in there somewhere. I'm Alex, Head of Revenue, and I'm joined again by Kirsty McGregor, our accountant in resident and secret birthday celebrant on Easter Sunday. So happy birthday for last weekend, Kirsty.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Bit of a shocker. Yeah. It was. It's tipping into that next decade. It's a real shock.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
20. It's just such a hard thing to come to terms with.
Exactly. Did you have a good weekend celebrating?
Lovely. Thank you. Yeah. Lots going on actually over a few weeks because it's, you know, different things with different people. So really nice. Thank you.
Any nice presents from the kids?
Beautiful diamond necklace of the other half. How clever was he?
Bloody yeah, hell. Very, yeah, there we go. Very yes. Smart. Very smart. Get in the good books. Get in the good. There'll be a holiday request coming soon or something. But nice. Well, happy birthday for last weekend. I'm sure our listeners will be wishing it. We both celebrate birthdays quite close together. I'll have to remember this for next
year. It's an Aries thing, isn't it?
Yeah, troubled people. but in preparation for your birthday, you had a really great interview with the MD of Siemens last week about the Made Smarter campaign. For those who haven't listened to it yet, it did come out on Easter Friday, so Good Friday. So understandable if you were busy looking for Easter eggs in the garden. But Kirsty, what did they miss?
Oh, really? This I put on LinkedIn, actually, that this one made my heart sing. You know, I'm quite a... I suppose being a Northerner, in case you didn't know I was, don't mention it often. I've done a lot of, you know, work with manufacturing companies and stock takes on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And I love going into factories and engineering lines and seeing what they do. You know, I mean, it just fascinates me. And I'm really proud of the manufacturing base we have in this country, which accounts for 10% of our GDP. And we've done things in the past on the podcast with Make UK, who are the manufacturer's trade body. Umbrella organization, and you know they're trying to target a growth up to 20% of GDP, and this Made Smarter campaign is supposedly trying to help with that, but it's also trying to help what they call the long tail of manufacturing companies. And I think that's why I'm so I enjoy working with these businesses so much, is that most of them are family owned, owner managed businesses. Yes, you've got your big players like the Siemens and so on, but you've also got a huge number of small owner managed businesses that are in all our towns and cities around the country who are providing employment, providing training, providing revenue, and you know, and doing some good product, obviously, and a brand and pride for their local area. So trying to support those guys and girls and trying to show them how to become more digital with some support from real experts in the manufacturing space, to become more digital, to think about net zero, to think about lean manufacturing, and you know, all the transformation that they need to be doing to stay or to become more competitive, and to potentially export, which we'll come on to in a sec. All of that is necessary. And this Made Smarter campaign is a collaboration between the government and lots of private companies to help with that for free. Businesses, if they're in manufacturing engineering in one of the areas where Made Smarter is running, which is currently Northwest, Northeast, Yorkshire Number, West Midlands and East Midlands, they, and there's something else going on in Cornwall, which is attached to Made Smarter as well, they are able to get free advice. And then if they do need equipment, tools, whatever, to, you know, robots or whatever they need next, there are grants available as well. So it's a way of, they call it like the, you know, the front door into digital, into business support for the manufacturing and engineering sector.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know about it. So it was really just a way of raising awareness. The MD of Siemens is the co-chair on the National Commission. Their aim is to roll it out nationally, eventually. So get in, have a look at the website, see what it is. Make sure you know who the contacts are. If it's live in your area, get your clients into it. And and if it's not live yet, watch this space.
And there's clearly been some subliminal or some subconscious brainwashing of you in that podcast last week, Kirsty, because as we come on to our two stories of the week, the first two stories are about grants, and then one of them is about exports, which has a direct correlation to the GDP of manufacturing.
I need to get out more, don't I, really?
Yeah,
get some inspiration from somewhere else.
I think, you know, whoever, you know, is sat behind the podcast puppeteer is sat there going, just move moving Kirsty's your fingers across the right articles after last week's, but it has been a quiet week. So maybe actually it was more of a profound attempt to try and substantiate some of the commentary from last week.
Exactly that.
I can be between the lines as well. Maybe I'm the puppeteer, who knows? So let's move on to the first story. So the first story you've got here, Kirsty, is all about grants and the farming sector.
Yes. So I have pulled things in from various different sources this week. It has been a quiet business news story week, although we've had some stats out this morning, Thursday, as we record, around, you know, the lack of growth again in the economy. But we're not in a recession. That's the thing the Chancellor keeps saying. This one then is a sector specialist thing that I came up with. Again, I do like focusing into different sectors. And this one is farming. Not something I know masses about, I'll be honest. We didn't have a lot of agri clients where I worked. But I know a lot of accountancy firms do have large farming client base and agri departments. Of course, all now moving into agri tech, a lot of them, and into diversification. And I just saw this news article that there's £168 million worth of funding available to farming and agri businesses for lots of different things. Just thought it was a nice roundup that DEFRA have put together. If you are in the agri space, or your clients are, then I'm sure you know all about this. But I do think that as in the accountancy profession, we perhaps can do a little bit more in respect to grants. You know, there's the innovation grants, which are huge, massive things to apply for and take a long time. But there's also lots of pockets of small grants. And if you can find out where they all are for your client, then what great advice you can give them, or support you can give them by pointing them in the direction of those if they haven't come across it themselves. So never going to do any harm to find out more. But there's all sorts going on here. Grants for automation and robotics. And some of them are not here for very long, so you've got to jump in whilst they're live. Grants for R&D. Grants for productivity and slurry management, specifically in that technology fund there. So there's all sorts of things going on, tree health, for veterinary care, for animal welfare and so on. So all sorts of grants available. Nice little roundup on the DEFRA website in a blog they've written, and that's what I've linked to there.
And at the risk of asking a question that we might not know the answer to between the two of us, and this is working off of vague memories I've got through the kind of Brexit campaign, obviously a huge, you know, vote, part of the Leave vote was from the farming community, but I remember you know, as a country boy myself, kind of reading some articles, and as I tried to educate myself around the time of impact on both sides of the coin, like I hope everybody did, I remember reading or coming across a lot about how a huge part of the grants that we get in this country for the farming community specifically is driven from the EU, or was driven from the EU. And actually some of the stuff I remember reading at the time was talking about how by leaving we would lose a lot of that those funds. Do you know if that is what's happened? Is this are these funds new? I mean,
yeah, some of them are new.
Neither of us might know.
No, I don't know. I haven't studied it.
Yeah,
but some of them are new. But what you found is that there has been a slow shift. You know, when Brexit happened, even when it was finally signed, there still wasn't a complete cutoff straight away.
Yeah, of course.
There has been, especially around the grants and the innovation grants space as well, there is a slow shift to the new way of working. So some of them will be new. Some of them may still be part of the old scheme. But as you said, rightly said, those will be
under a different banner.
Shifting who's responsible for them now.
And actually, almost, it's like we planned this, it wasn't a plan at all, but almost makes this article more important, because with this change in tide and the kind of shift in direction, shift in qualification criteria, shift in availability, shift in amounts available, really important to make sure that if you have farming clients or clients that fit into these brackets, you're up to speed with what's available. Because exactly like you said, Kirsty, Sometimes we don't know about them. Sometimes we think they're going to take a long time to apply for and they don't. Sometimes they do, and therefore preparation is important. So 100% a great article to get stuck into and just go and have a look and see if it's applicable to any of your businesses. Very nice.
I think the beauty as well of the accountants that work in farming is that typically they are experts. You know, they have to be experts, because the accounting, the tax treatment, all the income and the revenue is all very different to normal businesses. So you do tend to find that those firms that have farming departments have some real experts in there, which is brilliant. So it's just another way of them making sure that they're up to date with everything.
Indeed, a nice resource point. And then we'll go on to the second article then. And the second article, again, plugged into a little bit unintentionally the Made Smarter campaign from last week, is from Enterprise Nation, one of our great partners here at Capitalize, someone that we do a huge amount with. And they are a thought leader in this, you know, kind of the business recovery space, talking about some of the impacts of our recovery over the last 18 months, right?
Yeah, and actually I picked this article up yesterday, but this morning on Thursday it's been announced by the ONS that the trade deficit has widened in the UK, which means that we're importing more than we're exporting, even more. And again, part of Brexit and part of the rebound after COVID is that we've got to, you know, try and look at how much we export and how much we support businesses to export. And this article, or it's a campaign, really, it's a study that Enterprise Nation have done with the Entrepreneurs Network. Quite an in-depth study, actually, really impressive read. They say that if the UK had, if UK exports had rebounded as strongly as Germany's have, and interestingly, that on the Made Smarter podcast last week, this is Germany, it was an example that the chairman gave, that Germany's rebound and their business manufacturing, etc., is so much stronger than ours. And we know that productivity is so low in our country at the moment, and this is only echoed by what Enterprise Nation are saying, that if our exports had rebounded as strongly as Germany's had following the pandemic, we would be exporting $111 billion more than we currently do. So maybe it is part of Brexit, maybe it's part of the customs arrangements, maybe it's, you know, it's more difficult. Certainly I know a friend of mine was on a trade visit with Department of Trade over to Singapore, I think it was Singapore and Dubai, a few weeks ago. So there's still a lot of that going on. We have done podcasts in the past with the Institute for Export. And there's, again, lots of business support out there if your clients are thinking of becoming exporters for the first time. But this article might just give you a little bit more information and a bit more confidence to talk to them about it.
Do you know what I actually quite liked about the piece, or you know, picking up on what you had said around this comparison to Germany, is I think often when you read articles, they'll pick like the outlier and they'll say, in comparison with the best performing country, we would be doing $111 billion more. What I really liked about this is it set the outlier as like, if we were best in class, this is where we would be. And then it benchmarked actually against the rest of the pack. And it talks about the other G7 countries. And it talks about, even in comparison to the other G7, if we just kept pace with the pack, you know, the peloton, would be $65 billion more. And I just think that was a really interesting comparison of like, if we were best in class, we could be there. If we were just bloody average, we should be here. Yeah. And actually we are, you know, as we've alluded to, you know, way, 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 way back. And, you know, it's we've got a lot going on in the UK at the moment, I think it's fair to say, hasn't it? You know, whether it's politically, whether it's economically, whether it's, you know, trade deals, whether it's the long tail of Brexit, et cetera, there's a lot happening and there are some sad repercussions that are happening there. But I did think that this was a really nice benchmark of like, you could be here, at the very least we should be there, but actually we're way back here and there's something we need to do about tackling it for sure.
And again, I think that's the role that accountants can play, is to give business owners confidence to look and explore new areas. I think we underplay the importance of that role that accountants have and the respect that they have. You know your power is something that we always say, because accountants need to realize, you know, that they do have a potentially a massive influence on their clients, and so perhaps looking at these areas, giving them a bit more information, giving them a signpost of where to go and find more again is the way to go. This report, it's really credible actually, so it's well worth a read, and potentially sharing it with your clients as well.
And talking about support and guidance and help leads us again thematically into the third article, which is all about increasing support available for tech startups, founders and others in those spaces in the digital economy, right?
Yeah, and again, another sector I'm not massively in touch with from an advisory point of view, but this organisation I came across doing some great work when the risk was around the Silicon Valley Bank falling a few weeks ago. And CODEC, the Coalition for a Digital Economy, and their chairman in particular, was absolutely fantastic in getting information out there to founders of businesses that were banking with SVB or would have an impact if SVB went down. And really just to give some comfort and a lot of guidance and information. And they are very much a policy making group. You know, they're there to speak to the government about the interests of founders of tech startups in particular. But what they're looking to do now is to shift that into a more commercial model to help startups. Obviously, that means it would be paid for. But what they're looking to do is launch a supporter program for founders of tech businesses. But what I liked, actually, I mean, how little things impress me. The list of the verticals, the different sectors that are in the tech. And I think this is the way we're going to start going now. We heard the Chancellor in his budget list certain types of tech businesses, you know, so it's not just under one great big umbrella term. But we obviously know fintech. We know fintech very well. Climate tech, I didn't know that was a thing in itself, but it obviously is. AI, I know. Deep tech, yeah, I knew the words. Yeah, link those together. AI and deep tech is an area. Cyber and defense tech is another. Crypto and Web3, and then health tech or medtech, I used to call it.
Yeah, medtech.
So
yeah.
All those areas are specific, you know, tech areas of different different niches, which I thought was interesting. So yeah, just someone to be aware of. Keep an eye on CODEC. I think I picked this one really because I regularly have firms saying to me, you know, we need some funding for a startup, a pre-revenue. They're going to do amazing things. And of course, we're very much in the debt space at Capitalize. So pre-revenue is not something that a lender would typically fund. And even the venture capital community and even the business angel community like to see traction and some experience, proof of concept, proof of market, proof of management team before they will invest in any growth. And you know, just this week I had a contact come to me and say, I've got this great idea, I really want to do this, and actually I know the market he's talking about, and I think it is a great idea, but it is going to take quite a lot of money to get it going. And where's he going to find that from? You know, so it's that typical difficult situation of how to get the ball rolling with startups, in particular tech startups. And having access to people like CODEC is a great starting point for an accountant to point clients in or potential clients in direction of people that can help.
Yeah, and I thought it was an interesting piece that this one missed things like edutech. Prop tech, you know, it was quite, I, you know,
look, well, he says nice in the post, actually, it's actually a LinkedIn post, but he says low down. Someone else said, what about edutech? And he said, it's coming. So there's others coming. Yeah,
there's loads. Yeah. And I think that's part of it. But I think also what's really challenging is that, like, the mentality of I've got a startup, I need funding, has been unhealthy for a long time. Especially pre-rev, where there's no proof of concept, like give me money and give it to me at a low rate or potentially for no equity or whatever it might be. And I remember, you know, a couple of years ago, I was starting up a business with a friend of mine. And you know, every time we spoke to like an angel investor or a Series A, they were like, guys, look, first thing you need to do is go and get it from your friends and family, you know, get money from your savings, go get it from your grandma and your granddad and your auntie and your uncle.
And the startup loans company, it's taking a personal risk. That's a personal loan that they'll give, like Virgin Startup and so on that we do work with. But it's a personal risk then. And you've got to put that on the line first. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's an interesting world. And I think increasingly with everything we've been through in the last 18, 24, 36 months, money's not as free or, you know, as cheap as it used to be. And so there's a much greater cost coming. But three good stories, three things to get stuck into and read and explore. And, you know, I think, you know, Kirsty's picked some positive threads this week and some action points in the slightly more darker areas. But that's our news for the week. Now we're on to the fun story for the week. And Again, I searched far and wide for this particular story. I thought about doing something on the royal saga, obviously ahead of the king's coronation in a couple of weeks' time, but I thought rather steer clear of that because it seems to be a hot and dangerous topic at the moment, yeah. Ever-changing, shall we say. And a rather creepy story about a Furby, if anyone remembers those toys mm-hmm. from when we were all a bit younger, that was plotting world domination through ChatGPT.
Oh. God. It's possible, which, I'm sure.
Which I thought was interesting. But I thought I'd play it safe and stick to what I know best and what I seem to rely on or fall back on in this this segment the most, which is
sport.
And particularly relevant, this one, for all the golfers out there. And I know in our accounting community, it is one of the favourite sports. It's good for entertaining clients. It's good for sneaking out early in the summer. And it's great for coming in late on a Friday. And there's plenty of golf days out and about. But the story this week was, obviously, we've just had the Masters, and it was really a reference to the fact that first blood has been drawn by the PGA Tour in the PGA Tour LIV rivalry after Jon Rahm won the Masters. Brooks Koepka, I always get his name wrong, obviously disappointed us all on the last day with a less than perfect showing to really compete at the end there. But thought interesting about this was that Rahm, from what I've seen, is perhaps the first person to talk logically about why they like or don't like the LIV tour. And, you know, for the first time, I've seen someone take the money out of it and some of the emotion out of it. And he talked about, you know, the fact that he enjoys the thrill of the cut in the PGA, he talked about the fact that the shortened format of LIV, the 54 holes versus the 72, you know, the implications of that. But what was quite nice is he talked about, and this is where I think there is some relevance to the accounting industry and to many, many businesses, the introduction of this like challenger tournament actually forced the PGA Tour to wake up a little bit and think about how to modernize itself and bring itself into the future, which we've seen in the accounting space. We've seen it in the business world. We've seen it in the banking world. And so I thought there could have been a fun, slightly controversial story. I thought, as always, I'll revert back to sport. But I thought just an interesting one here. Obviously, there's the relevance of the golf and the impact of LIV and on golf. Good to see, and congratulations to Jon Rahm. Not that he'll ever know I've wished him congratulations. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting one for this week. Jon, if you do listen, then drop me a LinkedIn or tweet me.
I'll ask Alex Rory to get his number for you.
Alex Clark 99, you can tweet me.
Ray McIlroy, not our Rory. Yeah. I
mean. Anyway, so that's our stump for another week this week. Nice. Thank you, as always, Kirsty. Here's a reminder for those of you that are new to Capitalize. Our vision is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over business finance. The stories we've talked about today are all helpful in that regard. And just more evidence that we want every small business to be able to identify the risks they might face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the right funding that fits their business. Now, we'll be back next week, Friday, with another interview. I think we've got quite an interesting one lined up, slightly different tact to usual. But actually, I think this could be, again, and we say this every week, one of our most valuable ones if we can pull it off in the way that we want it to work. So tune in next week to catch that. But also do take a moment to go and find us on wherever you get your podcasts from, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, or one of the other many platforms that you can get hold of podcasts, and have a look back through our previous interviews. We've got some great guests in there and lots of really relevant tips and insights for some of the challenges that your clients and you as a business might be facing in today's day and age. For more about us and for more about Capitalize as a whole, please do go check us out at www.capitalize.com. Once again, thanks for listening. Have a glorious weekend, and we'll be back in a fortnight.